Hi, and welcome back to Give Us Morgue. I'm Neve.
I'm Megan.
And welcome for another week of podcasting with us.
We're here, all right, for some stuff.
Yep. Pretty much. I want to give a massive shout out to everybody who wished me a happy birthday. Thank you. You're all so cute.
Happy birthday to you.
Woo-hoo.
But it's now Christmas, so happy birthday.
It's been and gone, and now Megan's like, Christmas.
Yeah, I put my tree up tonight.
Yeah.
So if you can hear my cat playing with baubles, it's...
because she put her tree up on
so
the 8th of November. Literally 1 month before you were supposed to.
And, like, I don't even care. It brings me joy.
I mean...
It be like that.
It do be like that. I mean, I have started to put out some decorations.
Okay, so, moving on. We
yes.
have a crispy case here for you today. I don't know why I call it crispy, but it is.
it is crispy. Yes. So today I'm going to be talking about the story of Chris Benoit. And for those of you who know and are massive fans of WWE, you're like, oh girl. And then for those of you who don't know, you're going to be like, oh my God, I don't care. Because wrestling. Massive shout out to Cottle. Cottle has been a massive fan of wrestling, like, pretty much his whole entire life. Like, he grew up watching WWE. So he grew up watching Chris Benoit. Now, obviously, he's in his mid to late 20s now. Because I am. You know, he understands, like, wrestling is... It's fake.
Is it fake? Or,
it's
like,
fake.
I don't understand.
No, it's fake. And I'm going to ruin some magic in this. Because I'm like, so this guy told this guy to do this.
Okay, well, I'm interested. Because I did used to watch it when I was a kid. And I'd be like, this is fake. But then you'd be still glued to it. So
yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, it is, it's real in the sense that they are fighting. But it's moves that they've practiced. And you do a certain way so that you don't actually fully injure the person.
Right, okay.
And things like that. So, like, it is fake. And they do pick winners and stuff. They do have plans for some things. For certain winners to happen and that. So, like, yeah, it is fake. And Cottle knows that, obviously, now.
Mm.
But, like, as a child, was like, yeah!
But I'd say it's still entertaining to watch. Because there has to be skill involved with practicing these moves. And
look, I lol at some of their names. Some of the names that they come up with as, like, wrestlers. Because, obviously, they have, like, personas.
Oh, yeah. My favourite was The Undertaker. Because it was the only one I ever knew.
He's retired, like, 5 times.
Has he?
Yeah.
He's absolutely terrifying looking.
Yeah. Cottle made me watch whatever he did with Chris. I'm going to get in so much trouble if I get this wrong. Did he fight Chris Jericho? If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But they were supposed to do a massive thing. Was it at Royal Rumble or WrestleMania?
I don't know.
Something like that. But COVID-19 happened, so they couldn't do it in the arena because it was kind of at the... it must have been WrestleMania because it must have been... that I think happens in March, so it would have been at the beginning of the whole COVID thing. So they ended up doing like a TV thing,
right?
Like without the audience. I think it's called a graveyard match, if I'm correct in saying that. And Cottle made me watch it because it was supposed to be unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, I was sitting there like, yeah, okay. Like, it is in some ways good because there is skill in it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but he so clearly didn't punch him there. And he's so clearly... And Cottle's like, ah!
Shut the fuck up and watch it.
Yeah. So Cottle did help me a lot with this because obviously I actually don't know much about wrestling and WWE and all that business. So I was like, what's this and what that? So, yeah.
Just watch the two grown men in underwear fight each other.
Why are they always in, like, ridiculously tight clothes and leather to fight in? Leather is hard to move in.
I've never worn it. I don't know.
Anyways, so...
Even swiftly moving on.
I suppose I'll just jump right on in. So, Christopher Michael Benoit was born the 21st of May, 1967, in Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
Oh, so he's Canadian.
Yes.
Hello, King.
His father was Michael and his mother was Margaret Benoit. Chris grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. And during his childhood, Chris idolized wrestling. Was a massive fan of it, like, couldn't get enough. He loved watching Tom Dynamite Kid Billington and Bret Hart.
Yeah. Dynamite Kid, coming to cinemas near you soon.
When Chris was 12 years old, his, I think it was his dad, brought him to a local wrestling event in which Dynamite Kid and Bret Hart were the main act. And according to like fans and all that, it was a spectacular show. They were meant to be amazing. And this made Chris want to start a career in wrestling. So that he did.
Fair play, I guess.
Yeah, it's what he wanted. Chris began his career in 1985 in Stu Hart's Stampede Wrestling promotion, aka the Hart Family Dungeon.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Well, Stampede was its like own wrestling biz, I think.
Okay.
And then they had like a training program called the Hart Dungeon. Mm-hmm. So there you go. From the start of his career, it was pretty clear that Chris was talented. There was apparent similarities between Chris and the Dynamite Kid.
Oh.
And Chris would actually adopt many of his moves, such like the diving headbutt and the snap suplex.
Ooh, what's the snap suplex?
Suplex, I think, is where you grab them by the neck and, like, bam, on the floor. But a snap one is where, like, you snap. Like, snap! Wah! And for anybody listening, I'm visually showing Megan.
Yeah.
You, like, I think a suplex is, like, where you grab them like this. And then you, like, drag, like, jump to the floor with them.
Okay.
So I think a snap one is where you, like, snap. Like, snap. Like, snap them and then like grab them and like.
Sounds like a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris's first attempt at the diving headbutt though was a disaster. He hadn't actually learned how to do the move without correctly landing. So when he done the move, he knocked the wind out of himself and then he was like, not doing that again. But then he learned how to do it right and was like, let's go.
Okay.
And we will hear about the diving headbutt later on in the story.
Okay.
So Chris debuted on the 22nd of November in 1985 as a tag team with the remarkable Rick Patterson against Buff Moffat and Mike Hammer. Chris and Rick won the match after Chris had pinned Butch with a sunset flip.
Oh.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. Swiftly going.
The first title that Chris ever won was on the 18th of March in 1988. And it was the Stampede British Commonwealth Mid-Heavyweight Championship. He won 4 international tag teams and 3 British Commonwealth titles during his tenure in Stampede. However, in 1989, Stampede closed its doors and Chris joined New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right.
You look as lost as I was writing this.
Yeah, I do not have a clue. But there's somebody out there listening who's like, fuck yeah,
I remember that. Or yeah. And that was like, well, obviously Carl doesn't remember, but like that was Carl being like, yeah, that's right, he did. And I was like, God, I'm getting this right. Chris spent his new year, his first year at New Japan Pro Wrestling, just completely training. He was doing it in the, quote, dojo with the younger wrestlers to improve his abilities and technique. In 1989, Chris changed his stage name and costume. He started calling himself the Pegasus Kid. And at first, Chris hated the mask that was a part of his costume, but then he would eventually say that it just became a part of him.
Right.
Chris is said to have really improved as a performer while at New Japan. He was in matches that were just extremely critically acclaimed all across the board. In August 1990, Chris won his first major championship in a match against Jushin Thunder League. I'm sorry if that's wrong. Cottle told me that's how that was pronounced, so it's all his fault if it's wrong. He would lose the title, though, in November 1990, and then again in July 1991, and once again in November 1991.
Okay.
He eventually then reinvented himself after this as the Wild Pegasus, and then spent the next couple of years in New Japan. He won the Best of the Super Juniors tournament in 1993 and 1995, and this was a massive deal, apparently.
I'm just like, I'm trying to think in my head. I just, yeah, continue, because I just don't get it.
No, this, and this is why I like drafted Cottle in to help me, because like I didn't know that that was that. And Cottle was like, you know, Niamh, that was a major thing back then. Like, to win that twice in 2 years is like, holy fucking shit. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, cool. Chris also won the inaugural Super J Cup tournament in 1994. Chris would from time to time then wrestle outside of New Japan to compete in like Mexico and Europe. And he won several championships, including the WWF Lightweight Championship. And he would hold this title for over a year, which is also supposedly impressive.
Hmm.
In June 1992, Chris went to World Championship Wrestling, or WCW. So all of these, like New Japan Pro Wrestling is just called New Japan.
Okay.
And WCW, like it, they don't say the full name, they all narrow it down. Here he teamed up with another Canadian wrestler, Biff Wellington, for the NWA World Tag Team Championship. The pair lost their match in the first round. So Chris then wouldn't return to WCW until January 1993. Chris defeated Brad Armstrong at Clash of the Champions 22, and then a month later, with only seconds left in the match, Chris was pinned by Too Cold Scorpio at Super Brawl 3.
Whoa, not Too Cold Scorpio against Wild Pegasus.
Literally, like. Great. After this, Chris then went back to Japan. However, in 1994, Chris started working with Extreme Championship Wrestling, or ECW, in between his tours in Japan. He gained a lot of attention as the Crippler after he put Rocco Rock out. Then in August 1994, Chris competed in a one-night, eight-man tournament for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. He made it to the quarterfinals, but lost to Too Cold Scorpio.
Oh God, Scorpio and him are they're not a good team.
No. So how Chris became known as the Crippler was on November 2nd, 1994. Chris accidentally broke another wrestler's neck. Within the first couple of seconds of the match, Chris threw Sabu with the intention that he take a face-first pancake bump. However, Sabu attempted to turn mid-air and take a backdrop bump instead. But however, Sabu actually didn't fully rotate in mid-air and ended up landing almost directly on his neck.
Ugh.
Yeah.
No. No.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like isn't really Chris's fault. Like, your man decided to change the way he was landing mid-air.
Yeah, I feel like he wanted to be like, oh, look at me, I can get this land, or
yeah,
like a skateboarder trying to change it halfway through.
Yeah. However, after the match, Chris broke down in the locker room over the possibility that he might have ended somebody's career, or worse, even paralysed him. Paul Heyman, the head booker for ECW at the time, thought it was a good idea then for Chris to keep the name Crippler.
And what?
Yeah, the booker is, like, who books the storylines and the talent.
Yeah, but still, so he was like, Chris is, like, really upset about this. That's horrible.
And this was the kind of man that Chris was. Like, obviously, as we get further into the story, he'd be like, lol, no, he's not a nice man. But he was the kind of person that if he somehow messed up a move, or if he felt like he moved too quickly and it made it look more fake, he would sit in the locker room and be like, I fucked up.
Okay.
And, like, it would really get him down. Because he just wanted to be the best that he could. Like,
I do that when I finish editing their episodes.
You're like, yeah!
No, I'm like, I fucked up.
Yeah. So that's why then your man was like, you're going to be keeping the name Crippler. And I actually know who Paul Heyman is. He is now in WWE, the manager of Brock Lesnar. And it's funny because one time he said Brock Lesnar and it just made me think of The Simpsons. I can't remember what said.
Oh.
You know, where he's like, Brawr. So now when I see him, I'm like, Brock Lesnar.
That was great. That was really good. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And literally every time I see him, I'm like, bruh! And Carl's like, yes, that's him.
What is it your man says in The Simpsons? That's going to annoy me now.
Yeah, and it is. I can't remember, because I've done it too many times to Brock Lesnar, that I can't actually remember what's actually said. Say, where was I? Oh, yeah. So your man was like, you're going to keep the name Crippler. And from then until he eventually left ECW, Chris went by Crippler Benoit. Paul Heyman stated in the book The Rise and Fall of ECW that he planned on using Chris as a dominant heel, which is the bad guy, for quite some time before putting the main title, ECW World Heavyweight Championship, and to have Chris be the long-term champion of the company. Like, he was like, we wanted to keep him, and we wanted him to be the long-term champion as a bad guy.
Right.
Because that brings in views.
Yeah.
You, when a bad guy's winning, people are like, boo!
Yeah, of course.
You know. So, yeah.
Hate watch.
Yeah.
Like, people hate listen.
Love you. Chris and Dean Malenko won the ECW World Tag Team Championship in February 1995. This was Chris's first American title. He was then initiated into the Triple Threat Stable, which was led by Shane Douglas. They, however, lost the championship to the Public Enemy in April 1995 at the Three-Way Dance. These are the names they come up with, okay? I can't cope.
Yeah. Yeah, so all of that stuff happened, you guys.
That's all real.
Yeah.
None of that is made up, unfortunately. Chris spent some time in ECW feuding with the Steiner brothers and Too Cold Scorpio. And feuding being like...
Why is he feuding with Too Cold Scorpio when he can't even win a match against him? Like, what is there to feud about?
Lol. Chris was then forced to leave ECW when Paul Heyman failed to renew Chris's work visa. Because Chris is in, like, while he's wrestling in ECW, he's still in the company New Japan. And New Japan have just sent him out for work. Like, so he is on a work visa because he's Canadian.
Yeah.
So Paul Heyman forgot to renew it. So Chris had to go back to New Japan and tour with them. And that's when WCW called. So during this time period, while all this random shit is going on, and I say random because, like, Too Cold Scorpio.
Yeah.
I guess. So during this, Chris was actually married to a woman named Martina. The pair had two children during their marriage, David and Megan Benoit. But that marriage would eventually break down and the pair got divorced in 1997. Chris also made a friend for life whilst in Japan. Chris met a man named Eddie Guerrero following a wrestling match in Japan where Chris kicked Eddie in the head and knocked him out. Pair initially hated each other, and, like, it's apparent because Eddie used to call his then wife, Vicky Guerrero. And he'd be on the phone to her and he'd be talking about how much he can't stand Chris. She commented that he used to be like, this guy is an asshole, I can't stand him, like, fucking hate him. But the pair actually eventually became, like, the ultimate best friends.
That's kind of cute.
I watched the Vice documentary, The Dark Side of the Ring, and, like, it, people talking about their friendship, like, they were inseparable. Chris didn't really believe in anything, but Eddie would actually introduce Chris to Christianity, because Eddie was really super religious.
Okay.
So he just kind of, whilst he himself being super religious, just happened then to introduce Chris to it, because he'd be like, you know, home Bible stuff.
And things.
In 1995, Chris signed with WCW, as New Japan and WCW had a talent exchange program. After impressing people high up in the business, Chris was approached by Ric Flair and WCW booking staff to become a member of the reformed version of the Four Horsemen. And this was, like, a big thing. He was going to be introduced as a heel, and he would have a feud with WCW booker Kevin Sullivan. The feud was being perceived well at the pay-per-view matches, so Kevin booked a feud in which Chris was to have an affair, like, quote, affair, with Kevin's wife, Nancy, whose on-screen persona was woman.
Ooh, how mysterious, Nancy.
So in the 80s and the 90s, and even a little bit in the early 2000s, women in wrestling, like, it's not what it is now. Like, they used to just be eye candy, essentially.
I think I remember that, to be honest, yeah. They used to kind of come out in the ring and be like, oh my god, and, like, pull each other's hair and stuff.
And that would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris and Nancy were forced to spend time together to make the affair seem real. They had to hold hands in public and share hotel rooms.
How awkward is that?
So naturally enough, the on-screen affair became an off-screen one.
Stop the lights.
A lot of people were like, essentially Kevin Sullivan signed his own divorce papers then and there, the day he booked that. In 1997, Nancy moved in with Chris and divorced Kevin, claiming that he had been physically abusive towards her. Now, this is mentioned in the documentary that I watched.
Mm.
Your man Kevin Sullivan never came forward to comment on it, so right. I do have to say, she alleged that he did it. We don't have any proof that he did. So,
yeah.
I don't want to be going out there calling somebody a wife beater if they're not. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah.
Soon after this, Chris and Nancy got engaged. Chris began feeling unhappy working for WCW. And in January 2000, WCW tried one final attempt to try and keep Chris by giving him the World Heavyweight Championship title. Like, they were like, you can win it. Like, we'll let you in. Please do.
Okay.
There was, however, major disagreements with management. And the next day, Chris, Eddie, and two other wrestlers left the company in protest of Kevin Sullivan becoming the new head booker.
Right. Okay. So
they were like, bah, bitch.
Mm.
The four guys showed up at WWF, which is now WWE.
Okay.
So I'm going to be referring to it as WWE, because that's what people know it as.
Yeah.
They called themselves the Radicals, and they aligned themselves with Triple H, even though they lost their tryout matches.
Okay.
So they tried out for WWE, lost the matches, but then were like, hey.
So they didn't get the job, but they still turned up in uniform.
Pretty much, yeah, basically. And I think pretty much like Triple H and Vince McMahon were like, y'all got balls. We like it.
Yeah.
Chris quickly became a fan favourite. He would take very few days off and would really focus on his performance. Like, Chris wanted to be the best of the best.
Oh, okay. But you still have Nancy at home. You gotta look after Nancy.
Well, Nancy actually became his, like, manager.
Oh, girl.
Yeah, like, she, you know, would, like, help him book gigs and
love that. Such.
Yeah. Exactly. The things I'm about to get into here, obviously, are horrible. And I find it very conflicting because, like, he honestly loved wrestling so much. And he just wanted everyone to love it. So he wanted to be the best that he could.
Mm-hmm.
Because he remembers how he felt when he was 12 and went and saw the Dynamite Kid.
Yeah, and he Christmas.
Yeah, and so he wanted to make other kids feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it meant a lot to him to be as unreal as possible.
Yeah.
So Chris's wife, Nancy, gave birth to their son, Daniel Benoit, on the 25th of February 2000. However, citing the marriage as irrevocably broken and alleging cruel treatment from Chris, Nancy filed for divorce on May 2003. However, that August, Nancy dropped the suit and the restraining order she had out against Chris.
A restraining order?
Yeah.
Damn!
Yeah. But she dropped it in 2003. Which is like, girl.
So, like, the same year she took it out?
Yeah. She took the... She filed for divorce in May, and by the August she dropped it.
Right, okay.
While Chris's personal life was just in absolute turmoil, his professional career was at an all-time high. In 2004, Chris won the Royal Rumble, and in doing so, this got him the opportunity to wrestle in the main event at WrestleMania 20 for the world title. And this is like the wrestling's version of the Super Bowl. It is a massive deal.
Okay.
Chris won against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And these...
Oh, shit.
Shawn Michaels and Triple H are like big...
Top of the top
wrestlers at this time. And so the fact that Chris won, it was like, holy fuck. It was a major career high. Like, you couldn't get any higher, essentially. And on the same night, Chris's best friend, Eddie, he retained his WWE championship. So there was a major celebration after Chris won, because the main event, the WrestleMania main event, is at the end of the show.
Okay.
And so when Chris won, Eddie came out into the ring and embraced Chris, and like confetti and everything.
Oh, that's
like,
nice.
And there's actually like there's a photo of the two of them with their belts, and they're like just the joy in both their faces is so lovely.
Living their best life.
Living literally, like, this was a storybook ending for fans. Like, you know, like, people were like, yay.
Yeah.
So. Sadly, on the 13th of November, 2005, at the Marriott Hotel City Center in Minneapolis, yes, Minnesota, Chavo Guerrero, who is Eddie Guerrero's nephew, I believe, was called by hotel staff. Eddie hadn't answered his wake-up call, and staff couldn't get into his room. So Chavo had to go down, and with the assistance of staff, broke the door down. Chavo found Eddie passed out on the bathroom floor, clinging to life.
God.
Eddie was pronounced dead when paramedics arrived. He was only 38 years old. Waiting down in the lobby of that hotel to go to the gym with his best friend was Chris.
Right.
And that's when he received the phone call from Chavo telling him that Eddie was dead.
Oh, God.
Chavo said that when he told Chris, there was silence for a couple of seconds. And then he said, literal howling. Like, oh, he just broke. Like, you couldn't break down any further.
Stop. No, I can't. Like, no. I can feel that pain.
Literally. So, Eddie's autopsy showed that he died from acute heart failure due to underlying cardiovascular disease.
Oh, God, that's awful.
Now, Eddie was major on the steroids.
Oh, really?
During this time in WWE, steroids are rampant.
Right.
Like, couldn't be more, like, everyone.
Normalised. And...
It was extremely normalised. If you weren't a 6 foot, 300 pound wrestler.
Demon
thing. It was kind of like do we want them? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, the likes of Eddie and Chavo and Chris, they weren't 6 foot.
Right.
And, like, I think Chris could have been, like, 5'11 or something. Like, it wasn't like he was short, but they just wanted these, like, monster men to fight. So to try keep up with these, they were taking rampant steroids.
Yeah.
It's actually shown that Chris had been taking steroids, like, when they went back, you know, investigating what happened. Chris had been taking steroids since, like, high school, because he knew at that point that he wanted to be a wrestler.
And... Do you know, steroids can actually have a massive effect on your mental well-being. There was a man that was taking Tren.
Yeah.
And he killed his girlfriend. And I think they kind of blamed it on Tren, on the steroid.
Yeah, that's what happened here. They blame it on that, but there's more to it. Chris fell into, like, major, major depression after this. He was hit so hard by the passing of his friend. And Chris would actually eventually start writing journals in where he addressed the entries to Eddie.
Oh, stop it.
Like, bro, you're breaking my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chris just took it very, very badly. On the 19th of June, 2007, Chris wrestled his final match. He had missed the weekend house shows and told WWE officials that his wife and son had food poisoning and were vomiting blood, and that he'd have to take them.
Oh, Christ.
And that he'd have to take them to the hospital so he wouldn't be able to attend. What I'm about to say over the next couple of paragraphs is going to be really tough to hear. I struggled with it because even though what Chris does is horrible, I also when you look at some of the evidence and stuff like that, I just, my heart breaks for him in some sense as well.
Okay.
What he done is horrible, but...
Right, okay. Go on, hit me.
Okay, well, this is people's warning. What I'm about to say is horrible. Okay, so on the Saturday 24th of June, at about 5:30 in the morning, Chavo received a text from Chris's phone saying, "The dogs are in the enclosed area of the pool and the back door is open." And then a few minutes later, Chavo received the exact same message, but from Nancy's phone. The next day, Sunday the 25th of June 2007, people at WWE are concerned as Chris hasn't showed up for his pay-per-view match.
Right.
And this is not like Chris. Because he takes work so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, where is he? What the fuck? So Vince McMahon, the head of WWE, rang the police and sent out a wellness check. When police entered the home, they found Chris, Nancy, and their son Daniel dead. On the Monday night, WWE hosted a tribute show celebrating Chris's career, as all of his friends and colleagues were just distraught at the news that Chris was dead.
Of course.
However, what WWE didn't know was the truth.
Right.
When police investigated what happened, it was pretty clear that Chris had murdered Nancy and Daniel and then killed himself over a 3-day period. Chris had killed Nancy on the Friday. Nancy died from asphyxiation and she had bruises on her back and stomach, which consisted with Chris pressing his knee on her back.
While
pulling a cord around her neck.
Oh my God, stop it.
They presumed the telephone cord.
Stop it.
She also had, I don't think it was Xanax, but something like Xanax in her system.
Right, okay. God, that's awful.
Yeah. So they reckon he did that on the Friday evening, Friday night.
Mm.
He then placed a Bible beside Nancy's body. Okay. On the Saturday morning, Chris gave Daniel Xanax and then suffocated him.
Oh my God.
And then placed a Bible beside his dead body.
Jesus fucking Christ. What the fuck?
There was also a knife found under Daniel's bed, but it hadn't been used, so police were a bit confused as to what it was. Like,
maybe Daniel was leaving it there as like, if somebody comes into the house or something.
Yeah, like it was a bit like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, eh. Chris then rang WWE, telling them that Nancy and Daniel were ill.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night, Chris went to bed with the bodies of his wife and his child in the house. On the Sunday morning, Chris had googled a story from the Bible about the prophet Elijah and a resurrected boy. I don't know much about the Bible, so I don't know what that was, but if you're religious, you would know. He then googled the easiest and quickest way to break your own neck.
Oh my God.
Chris went down to his home gym. He put a towel around his neck and then the cord of a weight machine around his neck. Chris then adjusted the weights to 240 pounds and released the weights.
Oy.
So that's what police walked into.
That is rough.
Nancy was found on a floor, on, I don't know in which room, but she was found on the floor. Daniel was found face down in his bed. And then Chris was found in the gym down in the basement of the house.
Stop it. That is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah, it's, I will, like, I just, it is horrible. Like, it is horrible. On the Tuesday, Vince McMahon went on air and explained how WWE didn't know the full story when they aired their tribute show.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
And from that statement onwards, any evidence that Chris Benoit had ever been a part of anything WWE related was erased. That included some of his matches from WCW, from ECW, pretty much everywhere, even a little bit of matches from New Japan. You wouldn't know Chris Benoit ever existed, really, if you weren't a fan of wrestling. WWE staff were told to never mention Chris or anyone involved in the horrific incident. And sadly, this included Chris's other son from his previous marriage. He used to visit Chris at work, so in WWE.
Yeah.
And, like, they all knew him and they all used to, like, be like, well, David and blah, 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 David, and knew him. And then after Chris done what he done, he never heard from anybody.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's absolutely horrible. You can't hold the child accountable.
And the same with Nancy's sister. And then in the documentary, Nancy's sister, she said she won't say who, but someone told David and that family that her and her family didn't want anything to do with them because of what Chris had done. And she had been told by the same person that they didn't want anything to do with her and her family because they were ashamed of what Chris had done. But neither of it was true. And David saw Nancy's sister as his auntie.
Of course.
So he was like, I just wanted to see my aunt. Like,
yeah.
My dad is dead, my stepmom is dead, and my brother is dead. And they took away my aunt.
How? Like, why are people getting involved? It's nothing to fucking do with you. I mean, fuck off.
Well, that's, I don't know. She was like, I'm not naming names, like, and who done it, who did that, but somebody did. Which I was like,
I'd name names. I'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah. And then a WWE representative went to Nancy and Daniel's memorial, and he was like, I was the most hated person there.
Well, yeah, you are going to be.
But like, he was like, obviously didn't want to not send anybody. But then the sister claimed that after that, nobody from WWE ever reached out. Vicky Guerrero, Eddie's wife, because she's still in the WWE universe, she stated that it was really, really hard because they did want to. They needed their jobs, and it was a case of...
You will lose your job if you interact
with any of them.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah, so it was. It was like, she was like... I needed my job. Like, and she was like, and it was a horrible thing, but it was just understood because that's what it was.
Yeah.
So I think in one sense, you can't blame them. You can blame management, but you can't blame them.
No, you don't. You can't.
Do you know? So a memorial for Nancy and Daniel took place on the 14th of July, 2007. And both of them were cremated and their ashes were put into starfish urns for the family.
Oh.
Chris also had a memorial at a later stage, and at a later stage was cremated, but his funeral was kept private for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The son, David, talked about how, like, they told nobody.
Yeah, you wouldn't, though.
Yeah. The media's initial response to what had happened was roid rage, so steroid rage, and it was everywhere. They were like, this is what it was!
You're right, okay.
And text messages sent from Nancy to Chris in the lead up to the murders seemed to almost prove it. Nancy had claimed that the WWE wellness program was an absolute joke. And the wellness program was installed after Eddie Guerrero.
Right.
Because he had a massive steroid problem. Mm-hmm. And so you had to do wellness checks before every match.
And what's a fucking wellness check?
They test you for steroids and other drugs, not just steroids, like cocaine, weed. You name it, they tested it. However, Nancy was right to call the wellness program a joke.
Right.
Chris had passed a wellness check days before the murders, but however, his autopsy showed excessive amounts of testosterone.
Well, they want him to, you know, win matches. They want him to entertain. If he's going to continue entertaining and be as aggressive as he is and forefront and whatever, he's going to keep taking the steroids.
Well, so... It was apparent that it was very easy to take a wellness check, to do a wellness check without setting it off in proof that you, like, you know.
Okay.
And they also let certain bigger known wrestlers get away without doing wellness checks. One of these was being Triple H, who is married to Vince McMahon's daughter.
Right.
So Vince McMahon being the head of WWE, his son-in-law, I don't think ever... got tested for drugs.
Right.
Another wrestler used to refuse tests and said that he would take one when Triple H took one.
Okay, well, yeah, like, I get that.
Yeah, and he was like, I'll take one when he takes one. Mm-hmm. And they used to leave him alone and not make him take one.
Huh.
So they were doing wellness checks on certain ones that weren't as big. Obviously, the bigger you are in WWE, the more likely they were going to leave you alone. And even if your wellness check came back positive or negative,
they're going to be like, didn't see it. Don't be shy. Some more.
You want some more? It came back low. So, like, you know.
Yeah.
there was major loopholes in the wellness program.
Mm-hmm.
A former wrestler named Chris Nowinski, who became a neuroscientist.
Oh, check it. What was his name?
Chris Nowinski.
Check it out, Chris Nowinski.
Yeah. He became a neuroscientist because he wanted to know about his own head trauma. He had suffered head trauma whilst in WWE, and he was curious about it. He was curious as to if there was any links between his job and head trauma.
Yeah.
So he became a dope-ass neurosurgeon. When he heard the news and seen all the coverage on Chris Benoit and how, like, the media were calling it roid rage, he thought that it could be something called CTE, which is a progressive brain trauma caused by too many blows to the head. Now,
okay.
Remember when I told you Chris Benoit adapted a move called the flying headbutt?
Yeah.
That move is where you get to the top of the ring, you know, the ropes.
Yeah.
You jump and you headbutt the person that's in the ring.
Ooh, that definitely was, be a blow to the head, all right.
Yeah, and some of the blows as well, like they used to... Before, obviously, like, in the 80s and 90s, when you were hit with a chair in WWE, you were hit with a steel chair in WWE.
Yeah.
It wasn't fake. It happened.
Mm-hmm.
There is many, many footage of Chris Benoit being hit in the head with steel chairs. There's one clip where he gets hit and literally blood is, when I say flowing, I mean flowing down his face.
Jesus Christ.
So, Nowinski had met with Chris Benoit 6 months prior to the murders. And he had told Chris, Nowinski had told Chris, because obviously they're both called Chris.
Yeah.
Nowinski told Benoit about what he was studying.
Yeah.
And Chris was extremely interested.
Mm-hmm.
He told Nowinski to call him. And the following week, Nowinski did. But Chris seemed to be in the middle of something and asked if he could call Nowinski back. And he never did.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So when Nowinski seen the coverage on the murders, he rang the Benoit family. When they answered, he suggested that they get a check on his brain for CTE, which is something that you can actually only check for once you're dead, because you need to cut open the brain.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So he was like, ask for that.
Yeah.
So they did. And the tests that were done showed that Chris Benoit had extensive brain trauma.
Really?
So much brain trauma, like such extensive brain trauma, can actually affect your emotional behavior. Chris was only 40 when he had done what he'd done and died.
Mm.
But the brain trauma that he had in his head, he was too young for that. His brain trauma was similar to that of an 80-year-old with dementia.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And this is why what he did was absolutely fucking horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, the care wasn't there in WWE at that time, because Vince McMahon is like, let's make money and that's it. So the move that he did, the diving headbutt, he took from the Dynamite Kid, who actually told him not to do it. Because it fucked up his spine. The Dynamite Kid that had done that move, he wasn't the first person to do it. There was a person before him, and his spine was fucked up, and he was in, like, a wheelchair really young, and he told the Dynamite Kid not to do it. So there's clear correlation, you know, but the care system wasn't there. The care system is there now. The likes of Daniel Bryan hurt his neck and was, like, benched for months because of it.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen back then.
You'd be made.
You'd just stitch him up and off he goes.
Yeah.
On to the next one. So, yes, he was doing a stupid move, but he loved his career and he loved wrestling that much that he almost was like, this isn't sex. Like, because he obviously, it fucked with two people's backs.
Yeah.
So he was like, my spine is the whatever.
Yeah.
Not knowing that it was going to cause such brain trauma. So I do think it's really, really sad.
I feel really sorry for obviously I feel sorry for Nancy and
Daniel.
So for Nancy and Daniel, Nancy obviously seen something in Chris before. So she said cruel treatment.
So she did. She had told the sister and stuff like that, that like he wasn't himself. he was getting roid rage, is what he was. He was getting that.
Yeah.
And she said that once, yes, he did hit Nancy. And, like, she was like, I feel really bad because, like, you know, I almost let her go back to him, in a sense.
Yeah.
But steroids was so common in the business back then that it wasn't something to be concerned about, if you get me.
Yeah.
Now, there were four other people who had CTE and were wrestlers. Your man, Chris Nowinski, talks about in the documentary.
Right.
And he actually said that two of them killed themselves, and one of them killed their wife.
What the fuck?
They all had CTE. That was the one thing that was in common, was steroids and CTE.
That's really weird. So, well, it's not weird, but...
But that's why, like, I'm like, yes, he did such a horrible, horrible act. Like, immensely disgraceful. But at the same time, he wasn't getting the care that he should have been getting from his work. Like, they should have been there for him to give him what he needed, health-wise. But they just cared about putting on a good show.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, you're not going to know how you feel about this. Chris's son, David, from the previous marriage, would like to start a career in wrestling.
Oh, come on. Are you fucking serious?
He wants to carry on his dad's legacy. And it's actually, maybe this is why I, like, feel somewhat sad for Chris Benoit. David, in the interview for The Dark Side of the Ring, was like, I don't care what anybody says. Like, he was my dad. And that wasn't my dad. What he done wasn't my dad.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, of course, I get that.
And it was really, really heartbreaking because he was, like, even leading up to what he done, he was an unreal dad.
But why would you, knowing that that could be the reason, that wrestling could be the reason that your dad did what he done, why would you then want to get into that career path and potentially, even though the care is supposedly now there, but potentially do the same injury to yourself?
So David and Daniel, when they were growing up before what happened, the pair of them used to wrestle together because they loved what their dad did.
Yeah.
And they used to talk about becoming tag team partners.
Oh, so it's more for the brother.
I think it's a little bit of both. Like,
yeah.
He wants to do it for his brother. And then as well, like, yeah, what his dad did was horrible, but it's what his dad did. And he loved what his dad did. Like, he loved it. He loved watching his dad wrestle. He loved watching him go out and perform. And he watched Eddie Guerrero go out and perform. And he watched Chavo. And he watched, like, he literally watched so many. Because he used to be backstage.
Yeah.
Triple H, Batista, all these people.
Mm-hmm.
He idolized because he'd be backstage and he'd be like, wow. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I do, in some way, get it. And then in other ways, I'm like, dude. But the fantastic news is that AEW, Chris Jericho, put David and his auntie in touch.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And they were like, it was great because we just talked on the phone for like 2 hours. And David was like, it's like I got my auntie back and it was fantastic.
Oh, that's so nice. Mm. I really like that.
Yeah. And I was like, me, like, at the start of it, I was like, oh, wrestling. And then, like, at the end, I was like, like, why didn't you make me watch this? So you can't really find any matches on Chris Benoit anywhere because they've all been erased. And Cottle, like, was like, still to this day nobody mentions him. And he, like, Cottle was like, they have, like, the episodes of the match where he was in a match, and he was like, it just, like, jumps.
Oh, really?
Because they just cut out his match.
Oh.
So, like, WrestleMania 20 is there, and then just WrestleMania 20 doesn't happen. The main event doesn't happen.
Oh, I see.
So, like, and I want to also state, when Eddie Guerrero died, they done a tribute show for him.
Yeah.
And he is, and still to this day, is beloved.
Yeah.
Which I think as well, like, so two best friends who loved their job literally to death, and one of them is esteemed and is held in the highest honour.
Yeah.
And one has just been erased.
Well, I don't know. I'm finding it very, very hard to have any sympathy whatsoever for Chris. he took away two very innocent lives.
Yeah.
Snuffed them out completely.
I think the saddest part about all of it is that whilst he was being erased, they erased Nancy as well.
Yeah, this is it.
She had a career in WWE.
Yeah.
And WCW, and it was just snuffed out.
Oh.
Because her
fuck wrestling. Fuck WWE.
Your man Vince McMahon is
a scumbag.
He's greedy.
Yeah.
To this day is greedy.
Come sue me. Actually, please don't. I really don't have much.
Can I sue you? Because I need the money. I don't know what I'm suing you over, but yeah. So that's a hard episode I find to be funny in, because
that was just rough as fuck.
And like, when I was watching the documentary, in some of the articles and stuff that I was reading, it wouldn't actually go into that much detail about what had happened. Because I was like, oh,
yeah.
Just go kill yourself.
Right? Like, just fucking kill yourself. Don't bring other people out of it.
Don't bring your kid and your wife into it. But I think as well, it clearly shows his mental state. The fact that he went to bed, he did it over 3 days, and he slept in that house while his wife was on the floor and while his child was in his bed, and he just went to bed. I think that shows greatly his mental state at that point. Because you'd have to be in some mental state to be able to do that.
You would, yeah. I don't know, I'm trying to articulate words for this and I really can't.
I struggled with it because, like, I was like, clearly there was more wrong with him than just steroids.
Yeah.
But that's all people saw. And I'm like, clearly if he wasn't as good as he was, he would have had to pass wellness checks.
And how many 8-year-olds with Alzheimer's do you see killing people?
Well, that's dementia, but
sorry, my apologies. With dementia, do you see killing people?
No, but for a 40-year-old to have the brain of an 80-year-old dementia patient.
Like, go to a fucking hospital. Don't fucking kill your family.
Oh, well, yeah.
I have no sympathy, and I should have sympathy, and I'm probably going to look back on this and be like, maybe have a little bit, but at the minute, right now, how I feel is that I feel like he did have options.
Oh, no.
Maybe it was his mental health.
1000% had options, and I'm not, like, what he'd done was horrible. I think I just struggled with it because I was like, if only he had gotten the help that he needed.
Yeah.
If only WWE weren't such greedy bastards.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They're great. Yeah.
I'm just saying maybe there was a chance for them, like, not for him, but for his kid and his wife. Maybe there'd be a chance for them.
Yeah.
Watching the documentary, like, towards the end, obviously, they're all talking about, you know, a lot of them were like, they find it really difficult because they were his friend and he was a beloved man.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for them to think about what he'd done because that wasn't him.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them were like, this wasn't him. It is. It's what he'd done, but it wasn't. So they find it really hard because they're like, one of them was like, I have so many memories with him. Fantastic ones. He's like, and I struggle because I want to remember them, but sitting right behind that memory is what he done. Now, they do say, like, the decline happened after Eddie passed.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, maybe if Eddie hadn't died, things could be different. But I feel like you could say that also about anybody. If this had happened, maybe it had been different. But it's just, it's a sad, sad story.
It is. That was shit. Thank you, that frat me.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed not being able to leave throughout that.
It was really fun to write it.
I can imagine. Yeah, super fun.
It's just the kid. It just breaks me every goddamn time.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I always find it really hard to say it because I'm like, goddamn. Like, I'm going to have to tell a bunch of strangers that this man killed his kid. Like, you know, you're like, god dang.
Yeah, it is always the children for me.
Yeah.
It's just, they're so defenseless and they're just...
They're just innocent little children.
Literally the epitome of innocence.
And I'm like, leave them alone. Like, what did they ever do? Nothing. Literally nothing, because they're a child.
Okay, I've had enough of this conversation because I'm getting the rage.
The rage.
The rage.
Yeah. So, I'm going to lighten the mood and say, well done, America. Having the first woman as vice president.
Yes.
She's the first woman, and she's the first black woman.
So congratulations. Look, America, it was a tight run. I know it took a long time, and I can only imagine the anxiety.
You stress me out. Your country stresses me out. And I don't even live there. I'm sorry if I offend you by saying that. It does. It stresses me out.
It
does.
I don't get all the, like, electoral votes and public votes and all this shit.
I don't get why they do it that way. Maybe that's what stresses me out about it.
I know.
I'm like, why?
The most important thing is that everybody is safe, everybody is happy, and you are washing your hands.
Wear a mask, wash your hands, don't be a dick about it.
Put up your Christmas tree.
Free the titty, save the city.
Do you want
a fact? Always. Hit me.
A vintage cocktail.
Oh, girl, yeah.
Okay.
Why did I say it like that?
So, this is the blood orange punch. Ooh. So, you get 100 grams of cranberries, 100 mils of cranberry juice.
Oh, yum.
500 mils of blood orange juice.
Okay.
The juice of one lime.
Okay.
600 mils sparkling apple juice.
Okay.
Lime and orange wedges.
Okay.
Mint sprigs.
Okay.
So.
Started off very well and it just went downhill.
Just cranberries. I fucking love cranberries.
I love cranberry juice.
Yeah. And we can make this without the sprigs, I guess. Without the mint.
Would it be the same? It wouldn't be minty.
Yeah, I don't like mint. Fuck mint.
I think that's why I don't like mojitos.
Oh my god, mojitos are disgusting.
Aren't they?
They're vile.
Have you ever had a Cosmopolitan?
Are they they're like red?
Yeah.
They kind of taste like orange juice a little bit or something? No, not orange juice.
I had one and it was disgusting.
What is it?
I don't know.
Minty? No.
No. It wasn't minty. They drink it in all like the fancy movies, like in Sex and the City. They're always like, we'll have a Cosmopolitan. So I was like, I want to be like Carrie from Sex and the City. I'll have a Cosmopolitan. And then I was like, hit.
Sex in the City is just awful.
Okay, I liked it when I was younger. I don't.
Today, Big looked at me. Oh, and then I went out and I ran into a man from my past. Who should I be with? I also bought the wrong color Louboutins. My life is just so
I'm not so gonna lie, I thought you were gonna say I bought the wrong color fiber.
I mean, yeah. You want to have the purple one. The yellow one is no good.
Why would you want the yellow one?
I don't know. The yellow one, that it sounds kind of gross.
Do you know Nasty Gal sell vibrators?
Do you know Beauty Bay sell vibrators?
No.
Yeah. I'm like, kill it.
Yeah. Because I follow Nasty Gal on Instagram. Like, for their clothes. And then, like, one day they were like, it was like all music going on. And I was like, ooh, what are they selling me? And then it was like vibrators. And I was like, oh.
That's nice.
That's nice. That one looks too big. That one looks too small.
This one looks just right.
But it's yellow.
Anyway, the drink.
Oh, yeah.
So, first of all, get your cranberries and put them in the...
Put them in the vibrator?
Put them in the tub. Cover with water and freeze.
What tub? What?
Right? I don't know. Mix the cranberry juice.
Wait, make ice out of them. Put them in ice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mix the cranberry juice, orange juice, and lime juice in a jug, and then to serve... Smash the sheet of cranberries into shards and put it in the bottom of tall glasses. Add lime and orange wedges, pour in the juice and top up with sparkling apple juice.
Wait, where's the alcohol in that?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Oh, this is a mocktail.
Oh.
Oh. That's no good.
Could we add vodka?
Yeah, definitely add vodka to that shit. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, we suggest vodka.
Or maybe gin.
Gin might be nice.
Yeah.
A pink gin, maybe.
With cranberries. It'd be so sweet, though.
Yeah, it would, but...
Imagine that coming back. Imagine the heartburn.
Great.
Okay, I think that's all we have for today.
That's Yeah. The last ending of this is just a bit nuts.
I hope you have a beautiful day. Have a beautiful week.
Yeah, what Megan said. Hopefully next week be happier.
Okay, you know what? Do our socials. We didn't do our socials.
Oh, yeah, Saz, lol.
Oh my god, Neves, I'm not on the ball today.
I'm not. No, I'm a bit out of sorts today and I don't know why.
So am I. I feel hungover.
Me too. And like, I haven't drank in like 3 months.
Right? I had one glass of wine on Friday.
I haven't had any alcohol in like 3 months. And I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Must be a full moon. You know, my doctor actually told me before that on the full moon, she gets more like weirdos going into her. My doctor's amazing.
Yeah. We share the same doctor and she is amazing.
She's fucking lit.
She is.
Yeah.
Okay then. So we have been Give Us Morgue. if you have any suggestions or just anything in general and you would like to DM us, you can always email us at giveusmorgue@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Twitter or on Instagram, both at giveusmorgue. And if you want to see who you're listening to, you can always follow our own personal accounts, which is at megpowell_ and at Mrs_Neves. Thank you for listening to this very depressing story. If you are still with us, well done.
Fuck it up.
Fuck it up, fam. And we will see you next week for hopefully something slightly more cheery.
Want me to sing you out with a song?
Yeah, always. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.